Hi, guys. I'm Dr. Danny Chaban with Dominion Women's Health, and welcome to our podcast that still has no name to it. We've gone from If These Walls Could Speak, The Vagina Chronicles, The Vajayjays. So, again, if you can think of a podcast name for us, give it to us. Until then, we're still the Dominion Women's Health Podcast. Today's podcast, we're shifting from hormone therapy to polycystic ovarian syndrome. And polycystic ovarian syndrome is very common in the women of reproductive age. And it hasn't been, even though it has been around forever, it hasn't had that name forever. Back when I was in medical school, I did a rotation at Columbia Hospital for Women, and I got to follow some repro endo, the infertility doctors, who were putting cameras through women's belly buttons trying to figure out why they weren't getting pregnant. And they would see these cysts on their ovaries, and they would burn little holes in their ovaries and give them Clomid, try to get them pregnant. And the name was, back then when I was in medical school, Stein-Leventhal syndrome. And I remember the OBGYN, who was the infertility specialist, going, you see all these little polycystic on the ovaries? We try to burn them and it releases more eggs. And I was like, yes, sir, whatever you say, sir. Well, what they ended up finding out is by trying to stimulate those follicles and giving women Clomid, it increased their chances of getting pregnant was by 20%. So already they were having a difficult time getting pregnant. And I'm going to get into a little bit more about it as we go along. But that was the start. It was used to be called Stein-Leventhal syndrome. And according to the Journal of Endocrinology in 2019, probably close to 20 and maybe even more percentage-wise of women of reproductive age have PCOS. Does that mean that patients, when they mean polycystic ovary, all of them have cysts on their ovaries? No, not necessarily. The population of PCOS, I tend to describe it to patients all the time, is it starts off when you first start having your menstrual cycle at a very young age. I usually want to talk about, like, hey, did you notice that once you started having your menstrual cycle, you stopped losing weight, you started gaining weight slowly, you started noticing that your periods were becoming more irregular, they were heavy at times. Did you start noticing the skin around your neck getting darker? And that's called acanthosis nigrans. Did you start noticing maybe boils under your breast or in your growing area? That's hidradenitis. So, and hair growth is a big thing. Patients will start describing hair on their chin, maybe on their upper lip, on their chest, and down their abdomen. And those are all signs of hyperandrogenism and PCOS. What does that mean? And I want to try to describe things to everyone in a basic fashion when I'm talking to patients. I usually describe to them as I go, when you go out to dinner with your partner to Outback Steakhouse, let's say for instance, and your partner orders a steak, baked potato, cheese fries, blooming onion, and you order a house salad and a baked potato. What your partner eats gets burned as energy, and what they don't use for energy gets stored as fat. And what you eat gets stored as fat, and you have to break down that fat for energy. So it's almost like a reverse metabolism, and it's the form of insulin resistance. And patients ask me all the time, they go, well, what if I don't do anything about this? I don't want to worry about this. And I go, that's fine. But if you look at your family history or your family tree, there's someone in your family that has like type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, coronary artery disease. And I describe it to patients that if we tend to ignore this, it's a huge medical issue for you in the future, because if you're starting off at 14, 15, and you're becoming polycystic ovary, and you start having irregular cycles, and then those irregular cycles lead to heavy bleeding, and then it leads to hirsutism, the hair growth, then the hidradenitis, the acanthosis, the thinning of your hair, and the obesity. It goes from there to diabetes, from diabetes to high blood pressure, coronary artery disease, and stroke. And if you combine it all together, it's called metabolic syndrome. So what we want to try to do is avoid you making it to this part of life and capturing young women early at an age and try to avoid getting to that point. Now, what are some of the treatments of polycystic ovary? And this goes back to my original story about Stein-Leventhal syndrome. So these patients early on were trying to get pregnant, couldn't get pregnant, had Clomid. Some of them got pregnant, some of them didn't. And what happened is around age 40, they were being seen by their primary care and they got told their blood sugar level, hemoglobin A1C, was elevated, and they referred them to an endocrinologist. Well, the endocrinologist would see them and say, oh my gosh, you need metformin, you're a diabetic now, your levels are high. Within 3 months, these patients started throwing up. And what they found out was they were pregnant. It brought down their insulin resistance and stimulated them to ovulate. So that's how PCOS evolved from Stein-Leventhal syndrome. And that's putting it in a basic term. So what can we do at a young age with PCOS and looking at it on ultrasound? And on ultrasound, you'll see stuff in a textbook say a string of pearls, like a pearl necklace. You'll see these little cysts, but they don't grow enough to ovulate. Not every patient has them, but the majority of PCOS patients will have them. So what can we do from a health perspective to take care of PCOS? Well, early on in residency, when I trained, they always used to say, okay, start your patient off on diet, exercise, and metformin. Well, metformin is glucophage, and it's used different for diabetics as PCOS. So if I have a PCOS patient and I put them on metformin, their blood sugar is not going to drop to where they get lightheaded or anything like that. But what it does is it brings down your insulin resistance, stimulates ovulation. And the way I describe it in basic terms, it reverses your metabolism. So patients, if you're dieting, exercising, and you're on metformin, start dropping weight dramatically. And it decreases the hair growth on the body, decreases the boils that patients will get. So that's a huge thing. And when we were in residency, patients used to ask all the time, well, what if I weigh 250 pounds and now I'm down to 175 and I'm taking the metformin and I'm exercising? Do I have to stay on this medicine all my life? And the thought process was, yeah, I mean, PCOS is PCOS, but now some of the data out there is changing and it's showing that if you can change things with your diet, your exercise, decreasing carbohydrates, and lose the weight and your metabolism changes, you can come off the metformin. And we can avoid that process of being a diabetic later in life or having high blood pressure. And it's a big thing in this country. Once you start reading more and more about PCOS and you take a look at it, you start looking around your environment and go, oh my gosh, there's a lot of people with this. And that's the big thing. When I started this practice in 2002, and we were diagnosing patients with PCOS, and I was born and raised in Richmond, but I trained in New York. And when I came, people were like, what is he talking about? And then now it's a very common discussion among OBGYNs and their patients and trying to reverse PCOS. The other big question is asked is, how is this going to affect my fertility? And it affects your fertility dramatically. If I have a patient who has PCOS and it's not under control, you have an increased risk of not only not getting pregnant, but if you did get pregnant, it increases your risk of miscarriage. If you don't miscarriage, it also increases your risk of gestational diabetes and preterm delivery. So that's why we want to get it under control. And when we have a patient that has PCOS that gets pregnant while they're on metformin, we'll keep them on the metformin in the first trimester. And in combination, we'll have them see maternal fetal medicine just to make sure everything is up to par in what we're doing. What are some of the treatment options for it? Well, we talk about weight loss. That's the huge thing. Diet, huge thing. Metformin, that's another big thing that we tend to add to the mix. Then now you probably see commercials on TV for Saxenda, Trulicity, and all these other medications that help bring down your insulin resistance and help with weight loss. And there's a, I tell patients all the time, there's a lot of tools in our tool belt. We'll specifically design a treatment process for those individual patients. We are already talked about if there wasn't treatment for it, if you didn't comply, you have issues with future fertility, you'll have issues with weight gain, hair growth, irregular periods, insulin resistance. And with this insulin resistance, your male androgens are being elevated even more. The worst case scenario of PCOS that I tell patients is when you get this heavy and irregular bleeding, the lining of your uterus can get thick. And when it gets thick, it can increase your risk factor for endometrial or uterine cancer. And I tell patients you have to be very diligent about the exercise, the weight loss, and taking the medication. Because if you ignore it, there's a potential for uterine cancer. And how many times have I seen it in my career? 2 times. And it was always women around the age of 30 or less that got it. So it can hit at any time, but you have to be vigilant about taking care of it. Will the symptoms that I talked about ever end? Like there's a theory also that, once you go through menopause, it'll all go away. Yes and no. Your own body fat produces a low dose estrogen, which can also contribute to your PCOS and your future increase in endometrial cancer, ovarian cancer, breast cancer, if you have an estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. So this is something that can start affecting you at the age of 12, 13, 14, all the way to postmenopausal. But if we can take care of this at an early age, we can reverse a lot of the negative outcomes from this. Questions, Melissa?
Hey, Dr. Spann, thanks. So you had mentioned that OBGYNs have evolved into diagnosing PCOS. Do you feel like primary care doctors also have become more adept to it, or have they more referred to OBGYNs?
I still think they're getting there. I don't think that they're where we would like them to be. And again, it goes back to when we talk about hormone therapy. The thing that's frustrating in this country, and if you ask a lot of physicians, it's changing for the better, but we tend to treat symptoms and we don't treat diseases. So we have a wellness center, the spa. So what is one of the biggest clients in the spa? Laser hair removal. Well, you didn't just have hair on your face or your chest. There's something that's causing that hair to grow. So sometimes it is frustrating and it's aggravating that we're treating symptoms. So a lot of times these primary care physicians, who are amazing in their own right, but they're so busy because of the way healthcare is this day and time, they're treating a patient. Okay, a patient comes in with boils, so they give them an antibiotic to treat it, versus, okay, I'm going to give you the antibiotic, but let's figure out what caused these boils. Right. Or, hey, I'm noticing your hemoglobin A1C, your pre-diabetes is starting to go up. Maybe we put you on a diabetic medicine, versus, hey, has anyone ever talked to you about PCOS? So yes, I'm definitely seeing changes over the past 20 years. Is it where we would like it to be? No. But is it better? Absolutely.
Well, that's good, at least. At least you've seen some evolution, so that's good. So another thing you had mentioned also is, the possibility of increased cancer risk. Talk about, some screenings that you recommend that you get your patients get, especially when they have PCOS.
I tend to tell my patients when we bring them into the office for PCOS is I always do baseline blood work. I also, in every PCOS patient, even though if you look at the ACOG guidelines and what the care therapy, it doesn't necessarily demand it, but I get an ultrasound on all my patients because, number one, I want to make sure they don't have an ovarian mass, but I want to make sure the lining of their uterus isn't too thick, because if it is, then I'm going to do a DNC or an endometrial biopsy. But we definitely do a baseline. And how do I know my treatment is working for patients? And I tell them all the time, you're having regular cycles. if they start having regular cycles, they're noticing they're losing weight, we're on the right track.
Good. And what's the DNC and the endometrial biopsy going to show?
Well, it's going to show us whether they have normal endometrial cells or if they're going to have hyperplasia, which is related to high estrogen levels. And we go from there with that. And it'll tell us, is there simple hyperplasia or complex hyperplasia? But hopefully we don't ever have that.
Good. Is there also an increased risk for breast cancer at all?
I think definitely when you have hyperandrogenisms, increase in estrogen, and a genetic predisposition or an estrogen receptor positive, then definitely you're going to see an uptick of that in this country. We definitely see more fibrocystic breast disease because of the estrogen levels.
Okay. So it sounds like there's definitely some sort of genetic component as well to PCOS?
I mean, yes, and when we look at the genetic component, I think definitely it's related more towards the hypertension and diabetes. So I tell patients, you weren't born and with nothing and you decided to not eat healthy and develop PCOS. So I tell them there is a genetic predisposition for this because of your family history, but you can reverse this. You can stop this. It doesn't mean that I'm going to have to deal with this and that's it. There's nothing I can do about it. So yes, when I'm counseling patients or getting their history, I go, do you have a family member with type 2 diabetes? Do you have high blood pressure, coronary artery disease, stroke in your family history? And I would probably say 9 out of 10 times we have a strong family history of diabetes.
Wow, that's amazing.
Anything else you can think of?
Not at this time.
So I stumped you. Now you can't think of a question.
You were so informative. I can't think of anything else.
So what I want to do in our future podcast, and we'll probably add it with PCOS, is I want to try to bring in one of our PCOS patients and maybe talk about some of the treatment because I think it's worked out with hormone therapy. And then maybe even get some visuals and show you when I talk about acanthosis, like the darkening of the skin around the neck and under the arms, and the hirsutism, the hair growth, what it really looks like, the boils, what it looks like. I won't gross anybody out. Trust me. I'll be good about that. But and I just want this podcast to be to where we talk about things that are very common in women's health and what we can do. And we'll put the politics to the side, hopefully.
For now.
We'll go with it. But thank you again for tuning in to this podcast, and I'll see you soon. Thank you.